Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Carrington. How are you?
I'm excellent. Feels like we talked 5 minutes ago.
It does feel like that. This was a short game that we did quickly.
It was indeed. It was both of those things.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
So what's new with you?
Nothing. Let's see. I played Nord and Burt, and I have been diving into the 10-line basic programming contest and taking care of our new pug, who is mostly house-trained and mostly goes to sleep at night. So, you know, that's always fun.
A lot of mostlies in that.
Yeah. It's like having a... Well, it's not exactly. It's sort of like having like a baby. You know, it's just like, gotta put the baby down. There's literally been just like, be quiet. She's sleeping. You know, it's like we did when we had a little one. Anyway, so things are good. What about you?
I have discovered a new musical I like called Ooh. Be More Chill. Do you know it?
Yes. I've listened to it. I have not seen it yet.
I have not seen it either, although it previewed here in Toronto just a few months ago, I guess. And I never knew about it until it was gone. And now I want to see it.
Yes.
So I'll have to go elsewhere.
So it was off-Broadway in New York. And I think currently right now it's closed because they're moving to Broadway. And just in a few days, it's moving it'll do its Broadway run. And Peace and I are going to try to see it when we go to New York in March.
Excellent. That'll probably be one of 35 musicals you see.
Yeah, probably.
Every once in a while, I'll see on your Instagram, they'll be like, musical, another musical. And I'm like, Kevin's having a musical day.
Do you enjoy musicals? Is that
big time?
Yeah?
Yep.
So I want you to check out Bathtubs Over Broadway.
Oh, I don't know that.
Okay, so it's a documentary movie, but also was a book and is a website and is
it's
albums.
All that, things to all people.
Yes, it's Spotify albums you can download and stuff. So this is a guy has been researching industrial musicals of the 50s and 60s. And this is basically when a company like Procter & Gamble or, you know, Xerox or whatever would put on a musical to like... show their employees like what was happening in the next year and how they did, you know, in this fiscal quarter, and everything's coming up great at you know, Procter Silex or whatever it was. And they would do like full musicals that were sometimes recorded, and but it was just for, you know, employees or whatever. So
that's amazing. I had no idea such a thing existed. I am seriously interested.
It's really good. Yeah, so it's called Bathtubs Over Broadway, and then you can hear a bunch of them on Spotify. Or
I will sync it out. And dear listener, there will be a link in the show notes because I'm going to have that link for me.
Mm-hmm. It's real good. Yes, and Be More Chill sounds amazing, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. And Michael in the Bathroom, I'm all about that.
Exactly. Michael in the Bathroom is such a great song, And if listeners don't know what this is, it's basically like imagine the world's greatest high school musical. It's like in high school and it's very high school. I really like the songs. I'm interested in the characters, but it's one that I haven't seen. And it's about this, you know, nerdy kid, funny, I can relate, who gets a squip, which is this like internal thing. It's better than drugs. It's from Japan. And it becomes this internal monologue that makes him, like, forces him to be cool in a way that might end the world. Right. Goes to really cool places. So I want to seek it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
So that's what's new. Short Infocom games and musicals I haven't seen. That's what I got going on.
Excellent. Very good. Okay, so We played Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it. First, you want to talk about mail and Twitters and things?
Sure. And we should also talk about how I was wrong about the title.
I like wrong, talking wrong, about wrong. You being wrong. Oh, that's one of my favorite things.
It comes up a lot. We got very little mail, I think, because we recorded basically 6 hours ago, it seems.
Right. Yeah.
So I got a tweet from Janet with a link to some mapping tools. So that came up. So last show, or maybe it was the one before that, something like that, we mentioned Trisbort, the interactive fiction mapping tool, I think it bills itself as. Anyway, well, Janet emailed me a... or sent me a tweet. It didn't email me a tweet. That would be weird. Hit me up on the Facebooks. Sent me a tweet to point out there's a whole list of interactive fiction mapping tools on the Internet Archive. It's mostly like vintage stuff, but also some modern things, most of which I never even heard of before, including Trisbort. So I'll stick a link to that in the show notes as well. So if you're looking for something that helps you map out stuff, or if you're developing a game and you want to have inbuilt mapping or whatever, it seems like a whole bunch of little tools in there. So I'll stick a link in the show notes. It's on the IF Archive. So that was pretty cool, I think.
Very nice. When do we get to the part where we talk about how wrong you are?
Oh, we could do that now. We could probably do that a few times.
A few times. Yeah.
This super simple short game that I died in. Okay, so the title. I have said from the beginning, quite strong. You know what? We should back up. Let's. Oh, my goodness. I sound like my favorite novel is Tristram Shandy. So it's one of those. Have you ever read Tristram Shandy?
I've never heard of it.
Okay, so good. So written in the 1700s, but still I strongly recommend it. So it's my favorite book. And it's essentially, it's supposed to be the life story of Tristram Shandy. It's written by Lawrence Stern, but it's written as if it's somebody's autobiography. And the one of the overarching things in it is this guy wants to tell his life story, and he starts telling it. Then he realizes, well, hold on, you can't really understand me unless you know a little bit. I got to back up a bit. You got to know where I came from. So let me tell you a bit about my family history and my father and how I got named, and we'll tell you a bit about their lives. And then in doing that, I realize, well, you can't really understand that unless we back up a bit. And I tell you about, and it goes, and like, finally, he's like a third of the way through the book and he hasn't been born yet. He's like, okay, this isn't working.
Sounds exhausting.
It's hilarious. It's very, very, very funny. And he plays with word stuff, and he plays with like what you can and can't express in language, to the point where he starts like doodling and draw things. And there's pages that are just stuff written over top of each other. It's weirdly postmodern for something that's kind of at the birth of the novel. So in this, however, I was wrong about the title, because I was insisting that Nord and Bert couldn't make head, it's hard for me to even say head or tail of it, was incorrect, because it should be, it's one of those cases where it should be a nor, even though it's not a neither, because he could not make head nor tail of it. But I thought about that. I really thought about that. And I've come to the conclusion that I'm wrong. Weirdly, nobody wrote in. The internet normally will pounce on you when you're wrong about stuff. So weirdly, I guess everyone was waiting for me to figure it out on my own.
Oh, that's nice.
Or now they're going to pounce and say I'm wrong, that I was wrong. But I'm pretty sure this is the actual wrong point. I was wrong before, and now I'm right that I was wrong. I think it's supposed to be an or. I've now decided that I think this is a case where it's simply an or, not an or. So I've come down on that side of it.
Okay.
Not that exciting, but I'm saying that I went off about this a couple of episodes, but now I'm eating some crow, as it says in this game.
I thought hearing about you being wrong would be more satisfying than that. But Jason Compton tweeted us. I like to talk about tweets, but I often forget. Said, valid points on witnesses, rough edges, incomplete details, and general questionable value for money in versus other 1983 Infocom opinions. Those feelies, though, that they shipped it with debugging commands still available is perhaps telling. And he sent a screenshot of you can do $DB, and it says, find them bugs, boss. Right in the one page. So that's kind of fun. I don't know what other debugging commands are in there, but that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. He's right about the feelies, though. My goodness, that was a well-packaged game. It's just like an insanely well-packaged game, unlike the current one we're going to talk about.
Unlike Nordenberg, yeah. James also said, not entirely fair to compare those early single-author games to Zork, which had years of multi-author iterative improvements and developments. I think he's right. I thought about saying that last month, the last time we recorded, but I got distracted by something else. But he's absolutely right. You know, Zork 2 and Zork 3 were developed, you know, over years, really. You know, a lot of it, the ideas at MIT and a lot of people. And yeah, then you have one guy just sitting down and doing deadline over a weekend or whatever. It's not going to be.
I don't know if it was over a weekend, but yes. But yeah, you're right. The Zork games, like as like one bundle, had a bunch of iterations. So yeah, no doubt they polished that quite a bit. So that does make sense. That is a very good point that I didn't think of making last time.
Right. Yeah. Now that we finally dealt with the whole get versus take thing, finally.
Speaking of wrong,
I was wrong. Mishka wrote in to ask, do you examine or do you look at or do you just type X as a shortcut for examine?
I type examine crazily because I use... Oh, in fact, in this, I used... I think we're going to talk about, I don't know if it's a spoiler thing or not. Somewhere in my notes, there's a place where I use examine instead of look, in a weird sort of way. So we'll come up with it later, and I think on the other side of spoiler fence. But I'm an examine person. I'll use look for generally looking in the room, like just like the word look. But I normally won't say look at the bureau, for instance, because every time I do something like that, it always seems to correct me. And like, I'll say, look, bureau. I want to shorten it down to a two. And it'll say, you can say, look at bureau, look at bureau. Like, what do you think I mean?
Fancy Infocom game, not a Scott Adams stupid game. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but how about we just default to look at if I just say, look, I want to sometimes just say, look, bureau. So, but you can say, examine bureau, which has more letters than look, but is a habit I've developed simply to avoid the whole snarky responses from leaving off the preposition.
I usually type examine, but I really like it when the game has the letter X as a synonym. And it tends to be a thing that was only available in the later games, such as this one.
I don't think I've ever used X. I don't even know if I knew that was a thing. It took me forever to learn that G means again.
It's examine. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I know where it comes from. I figured that out on the fly just now.
Sometimes you're not very smart, and sometimes you really are. And I don't really know when what's going to be what. So
who knows what you're going to get? I learned about G for again, so I feel all fancy when I use that. But since we play the games out of order, sometimes it just doesn't exist anymore because it's an earlier one. So just you're always safe if you just type out the words.
Sure. Sometimes you play deadline and would we play the last one game we played didn't have the word all in it. So that's fun.
This one does. In fact, it told me I tried to take more than one thing. And it said, well, you can't do that because there's too many things you can take or there are too many variables. But you can take all. I found out it looks like I can talk about my oops with the word look. This is a game we're going to talk about that deals with idioms and phrases, weather the storm or whatever. Right. Though that's not really an idiom.
Cliches.
I got so used to typing the word examine instead of look. Mm-hmm. In trying to use one of those cliches, I actually typed the phrase examine gift horse in the mouth. And I was like, wait, no, that's not correct. So it turns out I do it without even thinking. So.
Nice. Very good. Let's see. We have, Sam Hutton wrote in and said, I hate to be that guy, but
that guy.
Nobody likes that guy. But I have a non-Infocom, non-text game that you might enjoy. Why am I reading this? But no, sir. No.
Well, no, but it was a good suggestion.
Here. It was okay, yes. He said, the game, you may have heard of it, I have not, is called Undertale by Toby Fox. It's an 8-bit RPG game about a human who has fallen into a mountain filled with monsters. The interesting part of the game is that it makes it so unique is that you don't have to kill anyone. You can instead choose to spare a monster during a fight, thus saving them from the cold iciness of death.
Spare the rod, spoil the monster.
Mm-hmm. Make bizarre friends and solve strange puzzles in the game. Achieve 2 out of 3 endings and keep coming back for more. Your faithful listener, Sam Hutton.
I have not played it, but I've heard amazing things. So it's been on my to-play list for a while.
Interesting. Huh. I have never heard of it until right now.
Or right then.
Right then.
Mark sent us an email. Here's the... I was talking... you found a bug in Witness because you find all the bugs.
Right.
And here's the logic. Looks like
I found two in this game.
I may have found one in this one. I haven't looked up if it's a known bug, but I think I found a bug. But you know what? I'm no longer ever going to be convinced. Like, the game could crash and throw up a bunch of nonsense. I still wouldn't think it's a bug. I have been beaten down. Mark via email wrote, here's the logic. Looks like if you haven't touched the gun receipt, you won't get the rest of the sentence. Oh, this is from when you were
I was complaining that it wasn't... It was... I finished the game and there was a sentence that said, like, we didn't arrest so-and-so because... And then it just stopped.
I like we have listeners that when we complain about something, will send us, like, the code from the games to say yep or nope or whatever. That is super amazing responses. So you wrote back saying, woohoo, I'm the bug finder, Kevin 500 Carrington 0.
Sticking to that. It's 502 now.
I'm going to say you're underestimating yours. I'm looking, scrolling down to see if I can find, if my bug is actually a bug.
Can you talk about your bug?
So I'm looking to see if I can find my bug. No, I'd give away a clue. Mm. I'd give away things. So in the spoiler fence, I will deal with that that gift horse again. We'll see.
Yeah, sure. I'll put that in the list of things to talk about later.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here's a game. Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it. It was released in September 1987 after Infocom had been acquired by Activision. Category is comedy. It's credited to Jeff O'Neill, who also did Ballyhoo and collaborated on a bunch of other stuff.
I loved Ballyhoo.
Yes, I enjoyed Ballyhoo. Yeah. Definitely more than this one. And the working title for this game was Wordplay, which seems super apt.
Super apt and better, I think.
Yeah.
I don't like the title of this game. In fact, I still don't understand the title of this game. Why is it called this? Nord and Bert do not appear in this game. This game has nothing to do with this, other than it's kind of a pun thing.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
The comic must have existed first, I guess.
I don't think so. The box cover has our only reference to Nord and Bert that we can see. It's a cartoon by a guy that we'll talk about in a little while named Kevin Pope. And so this Kevin Pope cartoon is on the cover of the box, and it's two farmers wearing their overalls looking at their farm, and in the pasture is a cow, but the cow has no head. It's a two-tailed cow. There's two sets of udders and two tails, and it's a weird-looking thing. And Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it.
I'd like to point out that cow has no head, but what does it have two of? Tails. So
tails.
Saying it couldn't make head or tail of it, it could. I mean, it's just, what?
Yeah, so, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
And then under that on the cover, it says eight tails, T-A-L-E-S, of cliches, spoonerisms, and other verbal trickery.
Did you know what spoonerisms were before this?
I did, yes. Did you?
Yep. I wasn't sure if that was a word you learned.
Yes. No, it was a word that I knew, partially because I have played this game before, which...
Oh, so you have played it. Well, that was a question.
Yeah, that's all right.
But the puzzle you thought was in this wasn't in this.
I know. So, all right, I'm going to recap all that because I think... We might have talked about it. I'm just going to recap it here. This is going to be...
Last time on Eaten by a Grue.
Right. This is going to be the canonical version of this story. So I believe... I'm pretty darn sure that I played this game in high school. When it came out.
I like how this starts off as the canonical one, and then immediately goes to pretty sure.
Okay, if you'd asked me before... I would have said, yes, I played this game in middle school. I said high school before. I didn't mean to say that. In middle school, and I borrowed the game. This was not a pirated version. I borrowed the game from my neighbor, who was named D-Roy, and he was an adult person who really liked computers, and he had a little kid who was into computers, and they had a... This guy, D-Roy, had... first of all, they had a VIC-20, which was not impressive. And then as soon as it came out, they got an Apple III. And D-Roy got like the full kitted out Apple III with the hard drive and the fancy monitor. And It must have been.
I feel sad for D-Roy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Yeah, and he got out when it just came out.
Because you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know, like, what a mistake that is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was, I mean, it must have been so expensive. And I think that maybe D-Roy's marriage wasn't great. And I really have the feeling that this might have been, like, one of the reasons why. that he spent just a huge amount of money on this Apple III computer. And so I went over there sometimes and we did stuff on the computer and he showed me whatever he was working on or, you know, games and stuff. And they had Norton Burt. Now, D-Roy was very anti-piracy and he would let me borrow his software, but he didn't use pirated software and he did not want me to copy any of his software. And I didn't understand that, but I mostly tried to respect it. So after they finished Norton Burt, they let me borrow it and I brought it home and I had an Apple IIc and I played it in a few days after school. And in my memory, it took me a few days after school. I'd come home, I'd play Norton Burt, and I knocked it out in a week or so after school, which seems like reality. I think mm-hmm. that, I mean, based on how long it took me this time, that seems like... Now, the thing that was confused, and I explicitly remembered a scene from this game. We got to when I got to the thing with the restaurant, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the part of the game that I remember from when I was a kid. However, there was another part of this game that I remembered, which isn't in this game. I remembered a certain puzzle, and I can't say anything about it right now because of spoilers. But I remembered a certain puzzle being in this game that ended up not actually being in this game, but I stumbled upon it when we played Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
That's right.
And I was really surprised that that puzzle was in that game because I didn't remember playing that game. So, anyway, this whole experience honestly has made me this like feel like, how much of my memory can I trust? You know, I was sure I'd play this game and then it had that puzzle in it. And anyway, so maybe D-Roy never existed. Maybe I never played this game before. I don't know. But yes, I had played this before and at least this was why I knew what a Spoonerism was. That's my long answer to the Spoonerism question.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, and I remember liking it when I was a kid and I don't think I liked it as much this time. I think we can give some context by me reading the back of the box in my best announcer voice.
Do it.
You are standing at the edge of a barren field. A steady wind, having secreted away the topsoil, is now drifting sandy dirt across the plain. A scant sign of life here is a freshly burrowed molehill on the ground. And then there's a prompt, and it says, "Make mountain out of the molehill." There is a tremendous rumbling in the distance, getting louder and louder until it is deafening. The dirt around the molehill crumbles away as mighty jagged granite peaks emerge from deep underground. The surrounding landscape transforms into a fertile valley before your very eyes. Infocom's first collection, only collection, of short stories takes you to a place where nothing is quite as it seems. It's a place where you really can make a mountain out of a molehill, where the fur is flying is taken literally, and where a bow, B-O-W, can be turned into a bow, B-E-A-U. Each of the eight stories in Nord and Burt couldn't make head or tail of it involves a different type of wordplay. You'll find yourself challenging your wits and your memory to come up with the cliches, spoonerisms, and other verbal trickeries needed to complete the puzzles. But don't view this as a hard row to hoe. Nord and Burt contains built-in hints which you can call upon when the going gets rough. All eight stories take place in the mixed-up town of Punster. However, no two contain the same people, locations, or objects. Each is played independently of the others, although you'll use passwords obtained in seven of the stories to get into the eighth. As for mapping, it's out the window. You simply type where you want to go. The tall tales in Nord and Burt are every bit as fun and clever as Infocom's other interactive fiction stories. They can each be completed in one sitting, making them a highly entertaining way to spend an Evening Alone or with Friends. Norton Burt was authored by Jeff O'Neill, whose mind is constantly working on artful new turns of phrase.
Well announced.
Thank you.
So clearly they're trying to market this to people who might not be drawn to other more traditional Infocom games, like saying, hey, you don't have to map on this. You can finish it in, like, each section is its own thing, and you can finish those in one evening. Mm-hmm. They're really playing up the fact that it's different, and it is different. Like, this is, I think, the most different game that we've played, like, compared to all the other games, even some that kind of stand out as being a little strange, having multiple paths through them, or or Sea Stalker being for kids and having, you know, like underwater mapping type thing. Like, a bunch of the games have had weird elements to them or different things, but this one stands very much alone.
This is
in
out there.
Structure and all that. It is very different.
Yeah, it is. And Infocom, I feel, often tried to try new things. They tried to push the boundaries of the genre, and it didn't always work, and sometimes it did, but you know, I like that about them in general, that they weren't just churning out treasure hunt after treasure hunt. They tried new things.
It did. I'm increasingly of the impression, though, that they seem to get very bored with... very bored is maybe... I'm being dramatic here. But they seem to be not as drawn to the traditional, you know, to remake another Zork game relatively quickly. They're like a band that puts out three albums and then says, you know what, I can't take it anymore. Next one's experimental jazz. It seemed weird. Like, it's not that we're dealing with a company that made these games over 25 years. And you say, oh, they've put out their 17th Zork game and they really want to shake things up now. It's like, by the time they finish Zork 3, which is really one big Zork game, they seem to already say, oh, we really got to go a different direction. Which, to their credit, I think, because they want to push the limits. They want to not do the same thing over again. They're artists, so they want to create. But maybe from a publishing money making standpoint, that wasn't the best thing. Because I would like more of the same, in a sense. Like, they give me this, and I laud them for doing this new thing, but didn't have the appeal of you know, even give me another Ballyhoo or something.
I'm right.
You know, so
yeah, I would have taken another Ballyhoo. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the feelies in the box are
weird. Also weird.
Weird and limited. So the Browsy is, and I didn't have an original one of this. So I just went with online stuff, and I played it on a computer. I didn't even play it on Pitch Dark, which I played the last couple on, which I really liked. But this I played in a couple of sittings at work. I would take a pause and sit down and play a game. So I just played it on Mac at work. So I use Zoom for this one. But the PDF of the Browsy I got is basically just pages of comics by this guy who isn't Gary Larson. But kind of looks like Gary. I mean, they look like Far Side comics. And I'm not, I think they're okay, but some aren't terrific, I think. And that's the Browsy.
You get this booklet of like 9 or 10 cartoons and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of set the, I actually didn't read the cartoons until after I played the game. They certainly set the tone for the kind of puzzles that are in this game. I think, you know, there's one of them, there is a little bug, a tick, holding up a giant 5,000-pound weight. It says, a hardy tick. And then in the next panel, there is a lumberjack-looking guy, and he's looking at a clock going, uh-oh, and it says, a tardy hick. And so... that's
there's your spoonerism.
There's your spoonerism. Yeah.
I found it weird that the clock is showing 8:05. So I guess he had to be the right. You think it would be 9:05, like the traditional 9-to-5 job? It's an odd choice to make it 8:05,
I thought. Yeah, he's had to be somewhere at 8. He had a date. He has a lunch pail in his hand, so I think he's going to work. So I think we've overthought that cartoon already.
Because some I like more than others. There's one that says the chef's surprise, and it's got like a cooked turkey with a kitchen knife behind the chef. Like, that's kind of funny. But then there's one that's the old pie in the face routine is quickly countered by the old bowling ball to the face routine. And it would be a way to counter it, but that's not an old routine.
Right. No.
So it's kind of hit and miss. And it's kind of Gary Larson, but not.
You're right. It definitely has that style. And Kevin Pope was probably cheaper than Gary Larson.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yeah. So, okay, I had to look up Kevin Pope. According to Wikipedia, which is never wrong, Kevin Pope, born in 1958 in Indiana, is a cartoonist whose work has appeared in the pages of Mad Magazine since 1997. So, nice. Infocom did that thing again, which I kind of, I don't know, first sort of noticed with the guy who did the 3D-ing of the Leather Goddesses cartoon. They got the guy before he like made it big, you know, and that 3D guy had like a whole career doing 3D, and they kind of got him on when he was just starting out. And it seems like maybe they did that same with Kevin Pope. I mean, he eventually went, you know, huge and Mad Magazine and stuff, but this was years before he started writing for Mad. So I don't know.
And probably was a good thing on his resume to help him go big.
Sure. Yeah. He's best known to Mad readers as the artist for the Melvin and Jenkins series of behavioral guides. Pope has also illustrated greeting cards, advertisements, and animation design.
He draws better than I do.
Okay.
Which is a low bar.
All right. Yeah, so that's the Feely. I mean, that's the Browsy. That's what you get.
Now, was there anything else in the box? I didn't come across anything that said, though. And in the box, you get a balloon or something.
No, I believe that was it.
Yeah, that's pretty getting short shrift.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. You know, and maybe, I don't know, I'm just guessing. Maybe Activision was just like, we're going to save money and not put weird little plastic rocks and, you know.
Oh, yeah, because this is 87, so they've been purchased by Activision. And Activision, I think, from our presentation at Kansas Fest, I think we said they basically very quickly just doubled the output and said, right. Hey, you're putting out, you know, 5 games last year. Well, we want 10 this year. And just boom, like that. Yeah. That's how we're going to make the money back from buying Activision, is just pump stuff out.
And that couldn't have been good for, I don't know, quality control and things like that. And, you know, you've got to get the games out.
Right. And they're not going to that quickly double their testers and double their writers and stuff to, and all that, and double it to people that have the same experience and things. Right. So there must have been, not, but of course, this one is from somebody with experience who made Ballyhoo, which I really, really liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, I mean, it must have been changing the company from we are artists creating art to we're a factory, we're making games, you know. So.
And certainly within a few years after this, Infocom doesn't exist anymore other than as a brand name. Like, it just became not even remotely Infocom as we know it by the time they're putting out the Battlezone games or BattleTech games.
Right.
Another thing that's weird about this, though, that I think we could start as like a like an opening statement, you know, half an hour in, is a bunch of this game is based on idioms, which are like basically actually, that's one of the things I should again back up and say. Like, generally, like one of my degrees is I got a master's degree in English language and literature. So, yes, I took a graduate degree in reading in my mother tongue. Ask me how useful that's been. It's awesome. Right. But I went to the University of Sheffield for part of this specifically to take a focus in idioms. So, like, a big part of my graduate focus was in English idioms. So I should be good at a game like this. I should be well aware of them. And I don't think I was stumped by any of them. But one of the things that struck me about this is basing a game, not totally, but in part, on idioms, is idioms are a thing I like in English because they stand out. They are literally something that cannot be deduced. Like, you have to know what they mean to know what they mean. You have to come into one, or that is basically the definition of an idiom. There's things that are like idioms, like just cliches and turns of phrase and stuff, you know, beat around the bush or better late than never or whatever. But those aren't really idioms. Idioms are things like, you know, bite the bullet or hit the sack. If you'd never heard the phrase hit the sack before and someone says, oh, I'm going to hit the sack, you couldn't know that that means sleep. Maybe that means go to the bathroom. Oh, I had all that chili and I got to go hit the sack. Would work just as well, or whatever. like, hit the sack could mean I have to go to work. Oh, I got to. So you can't deduce it. So it's a weird thing to pick as the linchpin of puzzles, because you're inherently limiting your audience to people who already know these. So this is going to be a game. Like, one of the things about an Infocom game is it's all text-based, and I think by Activision's time, they're trying to go bigger. Let's put out twice as many games, go huge. And one of the ways you might go big on something is to localize it. Let's put out the German version. But this won't necessarily work. There's not going to be necessarily an equivalent idiom in German for hit the sack or break a leg or whatever, or mm-hmm. Bob's on the fifth floor. Ooh, I can't believe it's Bob's on the fifth floor. That could be an idiom. Who knows? Like, maybe it's one I don't know, being on the fifth floor. So it's an inherently limiting thing, and also can ruin the fun of a game. If somebody comes to it and they're not a native English speaker, mm-hmm. or they simply don't know, it's going to feel unfair. Like, if the solution is to type an idiom that you've never heard before, mm-hmm. you literally can't do it. Like, you're right. just going to have to look up right. what the answer is and say, well, it's like you can't, like, not be able to understand a joke. And once you're told, you're never going to like it. Right. So there's some inherent landmines to this that mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they really thought through before using it as the basis for a game.
This game would absolutely be unplayable if you weren't a native English speaker. And parts of it, a couple of parts I couldn't figure out, because, and even though I am a native English speaker who grew up in America, there was somewhere in there, there was one idiom or cliche or something that I'd never heard of. There was another one. I'm just going to say it. This is such a small spoiler. Just get over it. I tried tip the apple cart. Well, it wanted upset the apple cart.
And if you don't know the idiom that it's upset, yeah, then it has to be upset.
Right. Yeah. And it made a joke about, like, the apple cart gets angry or something. And okay, I get that. But, you know, tip the apple cart is really close and maybe could certainly be, you know, I'm sure idioms are different in different areas, you know, localization. Mm-hmm. What's the word? You know what I mean? Different areas might have slight variations on idioms. And so this game would be unplayable.
And a lot of idioms are regionalisms. Absolutely.
That's the word I was looking for.
In various pidgins and various local dialects, they'll have an idiom that kind of makes no sense outside of that dialect.
Right.
Which is part of the fun of them. I love idioms.
Yeah, and like you said, you could, potentially in a puzzle, if you can't figure out how to get to the other side of the wall because there's a thing in the way, you might be able to read the descriptions again and puzzle it out. In this one, literally, you can't, basically you have to type like a phrase, like basically dozens of times in this game, you have to type a magic phrase to proceed in the game. And if you can't think of that phrase or never heard that phrase, then you're stuck. You're not going to be able to puzzle it out. And
while I did know these idioms, I kept thinking of that. Like, what if you didn't? And also, if I would get stuck on a puzzle or I wasn't sure what to do next, part of me would always think, well, maybe what I have to do next is simply type an idiom that I don't know and I'll never be able to find the solution. So you don't have that sense of stability you do. When you're playing through Leather Goddesses or Ballyhoo or Zork or whatever, I'm looking at a puzzle like there's a door and I know I have to open the door, even if it's going to be a crazy, tricky way to open this door. It turns out I've got to flood the room and turn myself into a fish and swim through the keyhole. Right. But I might never have heard of that kind of thing before, but the game will have enough hints and there'll be a hose and a fist changing pill or whatever, and I could work it out. But in this game, at literally any point, it could have shown you a phrase that's a spoonerism or something, and you don't know the turn of phrase it's looking for, mm-hmm. and you don't know that you're stuck. You are stuck, and you'll never solve it. Luckily, the game has inbuilt hints, but you won't necessarily know that you got to go there until you're like, okay, I've been trying for 2 hours. I don't know what to do. Let me just go browse through the hints and see if there's a phrase there that I don't know. And I think that's an inherent downside to the structure of this game.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Which isn't to say that I hated the thing. There's a lot of here that I did like. I just think that there's a fundamental problem with the idea of the game that's just like, you know, part of the game.
Right. Yeah. Another thing that I thought was a fundamental problem with this game is it's written by necessity, it's written very differently than other Infocom games. Normally, they do a nice job of setting the scene and things make sense. In this game, very little makes sense. And the author needed to force crazy situations that mm-hmm. make no sense at all and aren't particularly fun or interesting in order to there be the spoonerism or the cliche or something that you need to figure out. And then it changes sometimes just arbitrarily to some other scene that also doesn't make sense. It just seemed all very non sequitur, and I understand why they did it, but I didn't like it.
Agree. I had that impression so many times through this game. There's like we said, when you read the back of the box, there's basically eight little mini games here, like seven that you have to play first and unlocks the last one, each of which has very little to do with each other. But even inside those, one of these mini games is you're going to go through a manor. And the idea is each of these rooms is kind of sort of alive and haunted by someone who was in the room before, which turns each room into its own complete different thing that has nothing to do with anything else. Mm-hmm. And just it's like, what? All, and it really felt like, oh, I'm going to have that room so I can shoehorn in this one cliche. And so we just sort of slapped a coat of paint room around that phrase. And I found that by the halfway point of this game, it would bring up a room description and I basically would quickly scan it just looking for things that were obviously spoonerisms or cliches or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I see that phrase. And I would just like type the real word of it. So you'd see a spoonerism and I would stop even reading the rest of the paragraph. I would just type the rest of the spoonerism and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then have to scroll back up and look through a description to see, oh, if I'm stuck, was there another one in that paragraph I didn't notice?
Right.
So it kind of took me out of gameplay anymore. And it was more like something from a newspaper that's just a wordplay pun book or something, which again isn't inherently bad, but it's not what I expect from an Infocom game, and it's not what I turn to an info game for. So maybe because of that, I had a negative response to it. But maybe because this is specifically aimed at people that might never have sought out, like say Zork, and they're trying something inherently different. Maybe it's better. It's just not necessarily for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept feeling like I wasn't playing a game. I'm just literally browsing through a pun book.
Yes, you're looking for the code word, the next code word to type in order to move on. And it's not figuring out a puzzle. It's just typing whatever you're supposed to type. I think we should maybe, it'd be fun to go through the eight scenarios and just talk about each of them briefly, but if you don't mind. But first, I'd like I want to read a sample of just like why I thought this thing made sense. And I copy-pasted many samples and I'm just of things that made me angry or just roll my eyes or whatever.
Me too. I frequently put into my notes just like I would copy and paste stuff in.
So I'm just going to read one of them I picked here. In a seedy corner of the factory, you can observe a scuffle going on. As far as you can see, a loving shepherd is engaged in a tug-of-war with a large, man-sized rodent, which appears to be a rat. The shepherd is struggling with religious zeal to pull some black and white cloth over the huge overgrown rat. Someone has left a bonfire going as a large pile of foam is burning in the middle of the factory floor. Above the foam burning, an icicle is hanging down from the ceiling. The shepherd keeps struggling against all odds with religious zeal, attempting to extract the habit from the large rat, which is fiercely clenching it in its snout. Just like, okay, it's no.
Because you can see that some of these words have been, like we said, shoehorned in. Why is it a loving shepherd? What do you mean foam is burning?
Now, right.
I get that that's like one of the worst puzzles in this game is this, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and you could probably.
That makes no sense. Why would it be burning foam?
Listener, you could probably figure that out just based on just me reading it.
Right.
But just as a picture of a story of like of a narrative, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm. And it pulls me out of it. When I read that the foam is burning, I'm like, well, that makes no sense. Like if you were writing this and you didn't have to just wedge that stupid pun in there, it would be something else. There's just a fire. There's wood burning. There's a million things. Nobody would make it foam. I don't even understand what that's supposed to be. It's so bad. Ugh. Terrible.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of things like that. There's a bunch of things where you just scan it, you look for the pun and you type the thing out. But I'm like, well, that's just not great writing. And maybe it's as good as the writing could be here. I'm not saying necessarily I could do better or even anybody could do better. But given the constraints of this list of spoonerisms and puns and idioms that you have to force into the narrative, it just makes the narrative super janky. Because they stand out as just silly things to have.
Right. Yeah. And it turned out, I didn't care. Like, okay, there's a rat. I don't care. Let's move on.
Mm. Pulling a habit from a rat. I wonder. Like, so you get like where that's supposed to go, right? Wait, Lester. Right. So, but I mean, that's just, why does that, like, a lot of really forced things.
Yeah. And I felt, I mean, there's, like we said, there's eight sections, eight short sections.
Some of which are way better than others.
Varying quality.
And the problem is, in general, they get worse.
Yes, absolutely. The quality goes from okay to terrible. And a couple of them, are good. I would give a couple of them a solid thumbs up. But most of them are like meh or just like bad.
Or bad. So, a couple are really bad. Yeah. So, and a couple I quite liked early on.
Let's talk about them. The first one in order that it offers them to you is called Shopping Bizarre, B-I-Z-A-R-R-E, which is about homonyms. And basically you can see you see a thing, and if you type the name of its homonym, then something usually will transform. And this is the one that was in the market, right?
Supermarket. And I like this one.
Yeah, it was probably the strongest, which is probably what was the first.
I think I like the By the Farm as much.
So yeah, you're going through this market and there's these weird things happening, and it made me hopeful for the game. It wasn't, I didn't love it, but
it wasn't hard. My goodness, I just flew through it. Yeah,
it took, I don't know, just an hour or something. It was kind of fun, and I liked it. The second one was called Play Jacks, which I thought was very short and pretty weak.
Very weak, and it's Jacks, J-A-C-K-S, not J-A-X.
Right. But the thing is basically uses a lot of that puzzle, uses a lot of words that have the word jack
like involved. Jackhammer, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Only one of which was creative and funny, though I don't know which ones we can say because I don't want to spoil stuff. But
yeah.
But one was a word that starts with jack that I wouldn't have thought of, but that's it. The rest of them were if you listed the first five things that would come to mind, it's those.
Right. Yeah.
So I agree. I thought that one was very short. It was very limited because of the whole nature of the jack thing. And it was also silly. Like the first one was strange and quirky. But by the second one with the jack thing, it really felt like this is where the game starts to do stuff that is completely nonsensical to just start to shoehorn things in. You get this machine that is a jack thing that can do many things instead of avoiding the obvious, whatever. I'm trying not to be spoilery. And it simply can turn into a bunch of stuff that's needed because those things start with the word jack.
Right.
But it's just, it goes higgledy-piggledy all over the place. Like the story makes no sense. It's just like they're brainstorming words that have jack in them, and then that's the story. Like it just felt like a rough draft of weird brainstorming and didn't get polished into something that was a coherent narrative. So I already didn't like the jack. I thought it was okay, but I was like, ugh, this one's not good. I was kind of hoping, well, that was the bad one and things would get better from there, but they did not.
So the next one is called By the Farm, which I wrote was about common phrases. And honestly, like I don't remember. What happened in this one?
I don't remember either. I just wrote down good beside it.
Okay, so apparently it was good, but forgettable.
It was, of course, it's the farm one. So there was one that took place on a farm, and you had to deal with a barn and horses, and it was very similar to the first one. And it had a couple of relatively decent-y sort of puzzles in it, and I dug it.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
Yeah, so
it was good
that.
Again. It was not great. Mm-hmm. The next one might be the strongest one, and this is the one I remember from playing when I was a kid. It's called Eat Your Words, which take place in a restaurant, you are in a restaurant and you're using it. I guess it's idioms this time. Which are almost common phrases.
It's very loose in its definition of idiom. So a lot of it is just, common phrases.
Right. Which was fine.
I like this one too. I thought this. And so at this point now, we have played four of the eight. And overall, the quality is okay. Like, I just, it wasn't that bad. And I was kind of enjoying it. I think this one, too, I wrote down very good beside it. So probably at the time, this was my favorite of them so far.
Right.
And then it just goes off the rails.
It falls apart. Before we move on, I want to talk, like, Eat Your Words, for instance, is that area has, there's three rooms in it. So these are, most of these are very small, with small little worlds. And like we said, kind of intimated before, there's no mapping and there's no navigate. You don't have to type north or south or whatever. You just type the name of the place you want to go. So you could type kitchen to go to the kitchen or upstairs to move to the upstairs of the restaurant, which is pretty different way of navigating in an Infocom game.
And you can do that most of the time. There's some places in the game that, like, you can't go to. It'll list, like, because on the top of it, it lists, like, you know, here are your exits, essentially. Very, very Steve Jackson. Did I get that right? Steve Jackson? Somebody pointed out the last time I kept saying, like, a different name. And I,
right.
You know the one. I mean, the two-word person.
Scott Adams.
Scott Adams, not Steve Jackson. Because I played a lot of Steve Jackson games as a kid. Scott Adams, very Scott Adams. So at the top of the, in this game, at the top menu, kind of, it will list, you know, in, out, shoebox, whatever. So these are the places you can go. It will sometimes, but rarely, list a place that technically exists, but you can't go because let's say it's too far away and you got to get a car. So once you get the car, then you can go there. So, and but if you then try to go to a place, you don't have the car to say, oh, it's too far, you'll need to get a vehicle. So, but it is the case that the maps are all very small. A lot of times one, two, you know, three rooms, just a few things. So it's very easy to keep in your head. So there really isn't a need for mapping. And in any case, you can almost always get from anywhere to anywhere. So it doesn't matter how they're related in space. You don't need to remember that. You can simply say, you know, go to the Belfry and it just jumps you right there. So,
right.
And I like that. I think that's, I don't think that's a downside at all. If other games could have benefited from that. If I'm in Zork and I want to get back to the golden pool, why do I have to remember to have to go left, left, down, up, wait? Just, I should be able to type, go to the golden pool. My adventurer knows how to get there. So
you're right.
So I like that.
Yeah. Next was, Act the Part, which I don't understand what this is doing in this game.
It is so bad. It is painful.
So this is a puzzle, a game about sitcom tropes. You are on the set of a 1950s bad sitcom, and the cameras are rolling, and there's an audience, and you are expected to do the things that you would do in a sitcom in order to get
not even
points.
A good sitcom, like a,
it's not a good sitcom,
terrible version of a 1950s sitcom written by people who have never seen one,
right? And this had nothing to do with the overarching theme of the game being wordplay. There was no wordplay in this. It was just this felt just like just tacked on because they had half of an idea and didn't know what else to do with it and put it here. So you're in the sitcom and you. Whatever. I'm giving a spoiler. It's so obvious that it's just not even a spoiler. You know, there's a lamp, and they make a point of like the gaudy lampshade on this lamp. And so, you know, you take the lampshade off it, and you wear it on your head, and you get laughs, and you get a point. And okay, all right. You know, it also had a part that I really didn't like. I'm not going to say, but one of the solutions, I didn't think of because it was cruel. It was just like, I was like, I don't know. I just thought it was.
Okay. I know the one you're talking about. Yeah. Because I knew to do it because I knew the phrase.
Yeah.
I thought, well, is this going to be okay? I saved before doing it. Cause I thought, well, this just could go horribly wrong. Is this
right.
a thing I'm supposed to do?
And it seemed out of place in this sitcom. And so that was weird. It was weird. And I don't know what it was here. The next one was called The Manner of Speaking, M-A-N-O-R, which was terrible.
Yep, that's that one with all the rooms that are different. And it's just, it seemed like whatever idea they came up with that they couldn't shoehorn into, I keep saying shoehorn, but couldn't shoehorn into the other sections, they threw in as a room here. And it was just awful.
I cheated my way through it mostly because I didn't care. I'm just like, I don't know what's going on here. There's nothing to do with wordplay going on here. There's this one room where you can't use a word any words, and I was just like angry at it and just like looked up the walkthrough for it because it was just, I was not having fun. So it was not a good game. The next one is called Shake a Tower.
And that's the Spoonerisms one.
The Spoonerisms.
Shake a Tower, one. Take a Shower.
Oh, I didn't get that. Okay. I didn't like it.
Well,
it was okay.
Do you take a shower in it? No, you don't. So it's like, no. Well, it's a Spoonerism.
Right.
Just like the title of this game, it's not applicable to the actual thing you're doing.
Right. Yeah. There is
but
a
I thought
tower
it was. I thought it was okay.
Sort of.
It's not as bad. Act the part and the manner of speaking are terrible.
Right.
Like, just like awful. Quit the game awful. Shake a Tower is not good. It's back to being like a bad one, but it's not like that just crazily awful that the two other. But the whole game just goes off the rails in the second half.
Yeah, yeah. And Shake a Tower was one of the ones that really, there was just descriptions of things that, like the thing I read earlier about the fire, just like, what, it makes no sense. It wasn't interesting. It was like reading a story written by a first grader, you know, it's like, there's kind of a germ of an idea here, but it just wanders, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then the final one, which you have to finish the other ones before you get to it, is called Meet the Mayor. And I don't know. This was more back to wordplay. It was some sort of...
And it was bad story stuff. So it was just... The whole point is you're trying to clean up this... Like, the town has become magically wonky because of the words of magic or whatever. And so you're now at the center of the town.
Punning happening.
Too much punning. And so you're basically going to undo that. And like by putting everything right by saying the things they're supposed to be and just kind of wraps up. I don't know. I remember one of my notes, I can't find it here, but I'm about three quarters of the way through the game as the game was just getting like so bad. I was like, wow, this is unlike, this is just not even remotely like the games we've been playing. I mean, last week I complained that it didn't seem like a professional game. Holy moly, bring back that one. But it occurs to me that maybe somebody at Activision was smart about this because you got these eight sections, four of which are middling to pretty good and four of which are terrible. Mm-hmm. It makes sense to front load the good ones because you're going to send it out for review. Most people who review a game can't play the whole game before they review it. They dive in, they play it, they got a deadline, they got to punch it up. So maybe it got decent reviews because people would only play like the first three sections and go, oh, this is not bad, this is good, and going to be eight of these. I like to read the reviews by people who finish the game versus the people who only start the game. I suspect there's a major difference in their score.
Probably.
Oh, speaking of scoring, the scoring is also all separate in this. So another thing that's different from this game and other games is normally you'll play a game and you'll have like 100 points or whatever, or we've played a few where they say, now you're going to get 7 or something. So they're starting to play with scores. But in this, there are eight sections, and each section has its own independent score. So like Shopping Bazaar might be like you're getting a score out of 10. So at any point you can have like 8 out of 10. But if you then leave there and go over to play Jack's, it might be scored out of 7. So now you've got like 2 out of 7. But those two don't apply to your Shopping Bazaar one. You've got each one. So you got these 7 sections you have to complete, and they all have their own scores. And when you finish those, then you can go to the Meet the Mayor. Right. Two things about that though. I finished one of them and I got out, but it told me eat your words. So my note says I didn't fully finish eat your words the first time, but I still got like the code word, I think. Here's the thing. I didn't have to use the code words. I finished each section and then I don't think this is the bug. This is just, I don't know if this is how it's supposed to be. So I finished the section and it says, oh, congratulations, everyone's happy you finished that section. And they give you a ranking. It'll say like you're ranked as. And for eat your words, I got the code word, I finished it. It says, congratulations are in order. You're ranked as satisfied customer.
Right.
Then in brackets, it says, truth is, there was one more thing that could have been accomplished eating your words.
Sorry.
Because my score was only like 11 out of 12. I went back and I figured out the thing I hadn't done. So I got the full score, but it gave me the code word. I guess that satisfied customer is the code word, but I didn't have to type those in. Like once you finish the sections, you can just go to the last one.
Right, I think
it told me to write them down, but I didn't. Wrote them down, but I didn't use them.
I think since we both kind of played it in one sitting, or you know, one save, you could save it and it remembered what you do. But I think if you started fresh with a restart, you wouldn't have to play through the sections if you had the. I think it was just keeping track, but if it lost track, then you'd need those passwords.
Okay,
that's what I'm trying to say. So I had the same thing with Shopping Bazaar. I got 21 out of 22, and it said, truth be told, there's one more thing you could have found. I was just like, I don't care. Whatever. Yeah, but some of them you have to get all the points in order to get out.
And okay, because I had kind of assumed you would have to, and so that's why when I finished them in order, and when I finished Eat Your Words, and that was one of the ones I liked, in fact, the one I think I liked best, it told me I had one more thing to do, so I went back, I figured out, oh, here's a pun I had missed, I typed that, and then that gave me the final points. So I was kind of assuming I would need them all for all of them. Right. But I did note that it gave me that code word. So I thought, oh, maybe you only have to get, you know, just to the end of them and it doesn't matter. So.
Right. Yeah. So Meet the Mayor is the kind of the denominator of the game, and you meet the mayor and finish the game. And
thank goodness for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was worried that you were going to
love it.
You were gonna say this game is delightful, and nope, I was gonna have to be the bad guy. But I'm surprised at how much you're down on this game.
For me, by a very long measure, this is by far the worst one we've played. Wow. Nothing would even come close. I would rank, if I ranked all the Infogum games we've played so far out of 10, I'd have to give everything at least a 4 so I could give this one a 1. Like, I think this is distinctly very far. Like, I've liked a lot of games you haven't. Like, I liked Sea Stalker, Sherlock, really, and I liked Sherlock, and I liked Moon Mist. I liked a bunch of the games that you were not as keen on. So maybe my standards are different than yours. But for me, I was like, this is terrible. This is poorly executed, and this is not fun. And I just, this is one of the few ones where I finished it because we're playing it for this show. But holy moly, I could have given this one a miss easy. Yep, didn't like it. By halfway through, I was like, oh, God, I can't wait for this to be over. And it was such a short game.
But it was short.
If this long as Zork 2 or something, I don't think I would have finished. I would just cut out. We would have been recording. I said, I don't care. Tell me how it ends. Yeah, this was not a good one.
Yeah. No, not a good one.
Yeah. Which I know is never fun. Sorry, listener. Yeah. It's never fun to just hear people like attack a game. But I didn't like this, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even the best parts of it were okay. You know, and it was never delighted me. Even games that I don't love, and there's usually something that.
And there were a couple of things. Like, there were a couple of things I found funny. Like, this, like every Infocom game, there are some really good parts. And so it's just maybe my standards of, like, because of everything that we've played, you just expect such a level of polish and fun out of an Infocom game that something comes along like this. It's just, maybe I'm being harsher on it than I would if it was just a regular game. One of those Scott Adams / Steve Jackson / who knows what they're called. Like, you know, that's not too bad. But I guess I hold Infocom to such a high esteem that even their failures are supposed to be pretty good. And this just isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What else can I tell you? 41 rooms, about half of the average of 81 rooms. It's really, like we said, not a game about mapping and navigation.
I don't see that as a negative at all. I generally like the games with the small maps. I want a map to be big enough, but no bigger than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally fine with a small map. Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, the vocabulary in this game was relatively big because it's a game about words. Vocabulary of 1,230 words.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, compared to the average of 976. A lot of objects, 69 objects compared to the average of 36.
But really, probably it was actually like 36 objects doubled because everything had to be, everyone had to have a pun version of it.
Yeah. And 10 ways to die. Average.
I died once. I did die in this game. This easy, easy, short game nonetheless killed me.
Yeah. I died a couple different ways. Yeah.
I had to play find the verb a couple times in this game. The parser let me down on some things. Where are my examples? Under bad parser, I've got a few. Like, there's a piper you come across. So it says, examine piper. It seems that the piper has a pipe. Examine pipe. Wow. There's nothing unusual about the pipe. I'm like, well, you know what? You could have done better. Why mention? Then it's like, at one point in this game, I'm standing on a chair. I'm going to do this non-spoilery, but at the point of the game, I'm for some reason standing on top of a chair. So I decided to get off this chair because I want to go to the attic in this game. So I type attic, because normally in this game, you could just type where you want to go and it just takes you there. I talked about that. So I like that. You just, at any point, if you're in the basement, you type attic, it just says now you're in the attic. So I'm standing on a chair in a room and I want to go to the attic. I type attic. You're not going anywhere until you get out of that plump, tufted, aristocratic Louis XIV chair. down. You're not going anywhere until you get out of that plump, tufted, aristocratic Louis XIV chair. Out. You're not going anywhere. Exit chair. You're not going anywhere until you get up. Same thing again. Stand. You're already standing. Attic. You're not going anywhere to get the pump down. And then it says, refer to the top of the screen to find out where you can go. I'm like, it says attic up there. Get down from chair. That isn't a sentence. That sentence isn't one I recognized. Down off chair. That sentence isn't one I recognize. Leave chair. You're not going anywhere until you get out of this plump, tufted, aristocratic Louis XIV chair. Get off chair. Look around you. Like, that's what it says. Look. So I look, and now I'm off the chair. So the response wasn't that you got off the chair. It was look around you. I'm like, look around me at what I can throw at the screen. For an Infocom game in 1987 and it's that hard to get off a chair? That's crazy. And little things like at one point, I'm in a place and the only exit like listed on the top of the room is in. Like sometimes the exits will be listed as in or out or down or whatever. So this is in and then in brackets on the pond. So I type in. It says, you walk out onto the middle of the frozen pond. And I'm like, that really feels more like sloppy writing than a joke. Like I type in and it says, okay, you walk out to the middle of the pond. Why isn't out to the pond? Little stuff right. Like that was just kind of, by this point I found the game frustrating. I was nitpicking little things like that, but I have a whole bunch. And so there's a necklace in the game that gets talked about, but you can in no way interact with it, even though I was really sure I could. As far as I can tell, you don't need to and you can't. And I don't know why they talked about the necklace in such detail if it's not a thing I can enter. It's not one of the verbs, or not one of the nouns, rather. It's just stuff like that. I found the parser frustrating, which, again, isn't a thing that's supposed to happen in an Infocom game.
Right. Yeah. Huh. Let's see. What else? Words I learned. Punchinello? Punchinello? A short, comical person?
Oh, I thought he was the guy from Chips.
Right. Yeah, that's Punch. Yeah.
I learned a word in this, too. So we'll get to mine. I learned umbrage. Now, I knew umbrage as, you know, like take umbrage, but I didn't know umbrage was a shadow.
Hmm.
Like a shadow cast by trees is an umbrage. That was news to me. I'm like, really? Yeah. Cool.
I think I knew that, forgot it. Another thing I knew.
Umbra, like from, you know, the sun, like an umbrella, like all of it made sense to me. I'm like, okay. Yeah, all this makes sense. Like, so, right. But for some reason, I only knew umbrage as to be mad. So, and it makes sense as like in the shadow of something. So I liked it. And it's a word that I learned. So well done game that way. So I like it when I learn a new thing.
Nice. I like it when you learn a new thing too. I'd heard the word plowshare, and there's a common phrase that uses that, but I didn't know what a plowshare was. It's the main cutting blade of a plow. So there you go.
Make one out of a sword.
Yes. Yeah, I knew that, but yeah. And then I'm sure at one point in my life I knew that 22/7 was the value of pi in fraction form, but I let that go, and now that's back into my brain. So that's one of those things that I'm never going to need this in life, you know, Mr. Trahan.
Turns out you will.
Turns out I did for an Infocom game. Yeah.
At one point in the manner of speaking, the top of the screen, like it says where you can go. And it was one of the weirder ones. So like the places you can go are interior, Kremlin, yawn, and RX. Like, what? I can go to a yarn. I can go to, or yawn. I can go to RX. Very strange locations. So there's also some like funny stuff. Like one of the things I found very funny, like this I thought was the funniest thing in the whole game. So I might as well just say it, then people don't have to play the game. You're in a room in the manner of speaking, which is just such a bad part of the game. But it's this one room that's decorated really lavishly. And it says against the far wall is an heroically proportioned Mediterranean crafted, intricately inlaid pre-Raphaelite limestone mantelpiece circa 1838. Adorning the mantel is a resplendently virgin ivory hand embroidered fillet patterned lace tablecloth circle 924 on your reader server's card.
That was good.
That is super funny.
Yeah.
The makes one me thing, laugh even now. That is hilarious.
The one thing that made me LOL was in that stupid sitcom one. It's like a woman enters the room, and I said, look at woman, and said, that's no woman, that's your wife.
Look at lady.
Look at lady, right. Yeah, that's no lady, that's your wife. I've ruined the joke. But, Anyway, I thought it was,
yep,
that was like the part that made me lol in a stupid sort of way. And, yep, so that's the
yeah, so there were some bits like that. Like, it's, you know, it's supposed to be a comedy game, but there wasn't enough comedy in it.
No,
like, these kind of puns.
Comedy.
And of course, this kind of thing, like puns and stuff, which I do not think are the lowest form of humor. The lowest form of humor are pranks. Someone says, oh, your dog died. And you look sad. Ha ha, you were sad because I said your dog died. That is the lowest form of humor, prank humor.
Yeah.
Puns are great. Puns are wit. Puns are awesome. But what puns don't do is make you laugh. So they're technically comedy, but it's the kind of comedy that hurts instead of the kind of comedy that chuckles. So when you build a game around puns, it's rarely going to have that, you know, feel good. You're instead taking the gut punch of puns. It's fun to say puns. It's a little less fun to be on the receiving end of them.
Yeah, and that's
true. That's what you're doing when you play this game.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that about it before
yeah, that's enough.
Ye old spoiler fence? Not yeah. that I don't know. I don't think there's much more to say about this stupid thing.
Spence.
all right, so we're...
So would you recommend this game?
Absolutely not. No.
Would you make it somebody's first Infocom game? It would be somebody's last Infocom game if it was their first Infocom game.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah,
yeah, I would not... I think everybody should listen past the spoiler fence. I think whether you play the game or not, you shouldn't. I don't recommend
right.
it. You should just... Unless you're a completionist. Okay, I'm wrong. If you are Kevin or Carrington and you're doing a podcast about this, or you yeah. really do want to play every Infocom game, which is our goal, so I can't fault the goal. If you want to play every game and you want to be a completionist, then sorry, you shouldn't. You should brace yourself and you should play it soon to get it out of the way. Don't save it for your last one, because that would be... I'm glad we didn't save it for our last one.
Right.
But if you're not going to be a completionist, if there's any of these you're going to skip, this is the one. In my opinion, this is the game to not play.
Agreed.
Yeah, so just barrel on through the spoiler fence and we'll tell you the answer to yeah. the two or three puzzles.
But before that, we need to pick our next game.
Oh, yes, we do.
So I had to make a little chart for you and I to keep track of what's going on. Yeah, did you see my chart? We're getting down there. And
we're getting down. Few, excellent.
We're getting down, yeah. I'm tired of you putting up, making us do other things. We're going to do a Spellbreaker next, which
I like
is
it.
Number three in the Enchanter series.
Excellent.
That's our next game. Getting down to the nitty gritty. Yes.
You're not going
to
give me a choice of two different ones so that I can pick the other one?
No. I'm calling it this time. You can
good.
Pick the next
you
one.
You know what? No, I'm pleased about that because I like to go into a game that is going to be longer, going to be hopefully a little more difficult, and going to be that I enjoy. And Spellbreaker, I think, is going to offer all of those because I have enjoyed that series very much going into this.
Agreed. Yeah, we're just coming off a couple of shorter, not good ones, and I'm ready for
I'm ready for a good meaty, exactly, a good meaty yeah. puzzle-filled, fun Infocom game.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Now that we've done that, it is time for the fence of spoiling. So I'm tired. Explain what this is.
It's the fence of foiling. So what happens is after this, dear listener, we are going to talk about the game in more detail. We're going to spoil puzzles. We're going to talk about the ending, what we got stuck on, what we liked, what we didn't like, and we will simply talk as if you have played the game. So we're going to spoil everything, which means we will make the game, can you believe it, less fun if you're going to play it later. So if you do intend to play the game, then you really, honestly, you shouldn't listen past this point. The podcast will always be here. You can always come back and listen to the rest of it. But if you are sure you're not going to play the game or you've already played it, then feel free to join us for the last bit of the show where we're going to talk about the game in a little more detail and spoil the stuff, spoil all the spoilery bits.
Yep. I got nothing more to say about this stupid game, honestly. It was not,
well,
not satisfying.
There's a couple things, like for instance, like this at the first part in the supermarket thing, there's one of them, I thought this was a good example of something that I got. I had to look up hints only a couple times in this, but I did. I will admit I looked up hints a lot of times because I think I could have probably muscled my way through, but I got to the point where I didn't care. I just was looking to finish the game. So I looked at hints sometimes. If I got stuck even remotely, I'm just like, okay, what do you got in the hints? There's this little girl who's you turn into a sausage because you say bratwurst because she is the worst brat. Now that's right. an example of the lowbrow kind of puns here. She's the worst brat is so forced. Mm-hmm. And I never would look at this girl who's just like a little girl who's being mean and like kicking you in the shins or something, you wouldn't just assume, oh, therefore I can turn into a sausage by typing bratwurst. But when you try to take all, is how I found it. So I said take all at one point while she's kicking on me, and it says mince taken, steak taken, worst brat, dashing between your legs and screaming bloody murder, the girl whirls round you in a violent twist. And I'm like, oh, worst brat. Okay, bratwurst. Yeah. But I would never have gotten that if it wasn't for the fact that she's specifically referred to as worst brat.
Right.
So it's easy solved, because when you read the phrase worst brat, that clearly is, you know, forced in there. It must mean something. So like, oh, worst brat, therefore brat worst. So it's unfun. It's not really funny. It's not satisfying. And it's kind of like super easy to solve when it hands you the word, and almost impossible to solve when it doesn't. Before mm-hmm. she referred to it as a worst brat, I never would have guessed to turn her into a sausage.
Right. And there were several things like that. We had to like look at things and just kind of like manipulate things until it gave you the mm-hmm. that.
A lot of examining. Every noun that would come up, I wasn't sure what to do. I'd just examine everything, and it would generally just refer to something in such a weird way, it would stand out that that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, I cheated quite a few times, and sometimes, like you said, it was just because I just didn't care. Like, I never, I don't know if I said this before, I'd never heard of Gore the Ox. Does that involve use of a plowshare? I'm really not sure. Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff I cheated on, and I wrote it down for a while, but it doesn't matter. It's just, I was just trying to get through this game, and some of the riddles, I mean, things were just so convoluted that it was so convoluted and just like stupid, like not in a fun way. And, the bad guy sews you to another sheet because he's using a needle and thread to sew you to bedding. And then you type, show myself to another seat. Yeah.
It's like, what? There's no chairs or anything involved. You just have to use that phrase.
Right.
And therefore, it says he confuses himself and sticks himself with a needle or something. Well, that makes no sense.
So much
of the game is like that. Yeah.
No sense. Yeah. We talked about, I don't know, I think it was the Leather Goddesses of Phobos. You had complained that some of it made no sense and it seemed non sequitur-y, and I said I thought they were funny, and it was out there enough. It was out there, but still enjoyable for me. But this is way like 10 bridges too far. You know, it didn't make any sense.
It's a lot of
also,
bridges.
there was a thing about thing where you have to tie sheets. Oh, yeah, you're up in the cloud.
Well, you know how to do that now because you messed up on that other
game. Exactly. And I knew what to do.
When I saw the sheets.
Mm-hmm. There's the sheets. I'm just like, oh, I'm on a cloud and there's sheets. And I said, rip sheets. It didn't have the word rip.
Oh, you just tie them. Yeah.
Yeah. So you tie sheets. So I found that frustrating. Yeah. And then, there was another part with the mare in the bathtub.
If the answer is you're supposed to throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is of course a phrase I know, but I didn't know to refer to, he's in the bathtub. Why would I know he's a baby? And I bet you there's a way I could examine him or something that would refer to him as a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. His name was, I forgot his name, but his nickname was Baby, but it's sort of mentioned in passing.
You know what? I missed it completely because I looked that up and it said throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm like, really? Okay, I know he's in a bath, but why would I assume that that's the phrase other than that's one of the few bath phrases you would know, like if you're looking for a bath cliche.
Yeah. And the other thing was something with the beer, and you had to put it in the water because it was deep sixing the...
Yeah, you have to give the beer, which says deep six on it. So I'm like, okay. And then there's a skeleton, of course, in the closet. And you have to give the deep six to the skeleton, which kind of makes no sense at all. And then the skeleton sinks away. It bugged me that I even guessed that that was the case. Like, you see the skeleton, you open the closet. You can look in the closet if you've got something that lets you see in there. I can't remember what it was, something. And then I was just trying everything. And so I tried give deep six, you know, give the skeleton the deep six, try to kill the skeleton. And it didn't work. But it turns out you have to take the skeleton. And if you're then if the skeleton's in your inventory, you can give the beer to the skeleton. And that made no, so I looked up the answer, but I'm like, but I tried that already. Oh, but I didn't take the skeleton first. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Didn't like it at all. There's the the girl, who of course is referred to as a pretty girl, so we must save her because she's a pretty girl, that says, though she's too thin and needs a square meal. So you get the square meal from hearing this horse trying to sound like a pig. So you're hearing the mare squeal. And so I got that, because when you say examine horse, you can't actually see it, though you can certainly hear the mare squeal. So I'm like, the mare squeal. I'm like, oh, okay, square meal. But here's how this went. This is the bug that I think I found. So we'll find out. But okay, Nathan, listen, man. I said, examine horse. You can't actually see it, though you can certainly hear the mare squeal. Square meal, because always in this game, you just have to type the pun. So I type square meal. You can't see any square here. Examine square meal. The squealing of the mare becomes so increasingly strained and high-pitched that you are forced to cover your ears, lower your head in a squint-eyed pain. The instant the terrible noise shuts off, your eyes pop open and notice that a rather angular meal at your feet. You can't just type square meal every other time. Like, if you just have to type whatever, like you mm-hmm. want, if there's the giant, who's the, what do you clean the giants? What is it? The gene client. So, I mean, talk about forced, but this person who's going to buy all the genes. And so it's the gene client. So you have to type clean giant, and then it becomes a giant that's squeak clean. I'm like, really clean? Oh, it's so bad. But in this case, you can't just type square meal. You have to type examine square meal. I think that's a bug. I say bug. I mean, it's probably intentional, but it's a wrong choice.
Right.
So I guess it's not a bug in the sense that it's an error in the code, but it's an error in the code in that it's poorly written. So I say it's that kind of bug. And also then right below that is when I tried to examine the gift horse in the mouth. So that's a bug on me.
Yeah, I didn't notice the gift horse thing. It was a horse, and it had like a bow on it that said like, do not open until Christmas. And I don't know. This game couldn't have made me happy, with even if I figured that one out. So
nope, that's true.
And then I was spending, you'd have to read everything super carefully in order to find the code words. And then I would find something occasionally and type it in, and it wasn't something they had thought of. So it would just be like, I don't know that word, you know? And there was something about deer, D-E-A-R, and I typed, this is a word I use, and I typed D-E-E-R, and it wasn't involved, and it was just like, I don't know the word deer. And so I felt like for a game that forced you to think about words and manipulating them,
especially homonyms.
If you come up with a homonym or a manipulation that wasn't part of the game, they should have at least thought of it and made a remark or something, you know. I don't know.
That's true, because they could easily look up what are the 50 most common English homonyms or something, like words like deer and there and stuff, and just include those, just have a generic response, like, oh, you won't see any deers here, it's not the forest or something.
Right. Yeah.
So how did you die? I died by the giant, up the giant we were talking about. Like, there's this thing where you have to, I guess you get this hat. There's a louse. So it turns into a lead house. So it's a...
Head louse.
I'm just like, what's the pun? Okay, so there's a head louse that you can turn into a lead house. Oh, dear listener, yes, this is this game. And so there's a lead house. You type head louse, it becomes a louse that gets into your hair. And I solved that even as a guy with none of that. Even as a dude with no hair, I was able to solve that puzzle. Way to go, Carrington. So, and then you get a hat. And if you put the hat on, then the louse goes into the hat. And then you give the hat to the giant, and the giant gets like distracted by that or something, or anyway, whatever.
He's checking out the hat or something.
And then you can say lead house again, and then it turns back into a house, so the giant is holding the house, which makes him too heavy for the cloud, and he falls through the cloud. So that's the solution to the giant thing, the giant that kills me. I had played it through once. This is the only thing where I restored my game. It's one of the few places that I stopped the game, and then I restored later to pick up the game again. It's at this point. But I restored and decided to start again from the beginning of the giant thing, because I kind of already knew it. So I was going through and get the beanstalk and climb up there and deal with the gene client and stuff. I've got the hat, but I missed the lead house part. For some reason, I just ignored it at the beginning. So I just took the hat, wore the hat, but the hat doesn't have the louse on it. I go up to the cloud, and the giant's coming at me, and this is the point where you're supposed to hand the hat to the giant, who will take it, and then you turn into the louse. But if it doesn't have the louse on the hat, the giant won't take the hat, which doesn't make any sense because the giant doesn't take it for the louse. The giant takes it for the hat. So, and so it says, remove hat. You remove the hat. The giant covers most of the ground between you with one cloudy step. Give hat to giant, which I tried to do because I knew it worked last time. Give hat to giant. There's no utility in doing that. You get a sinking feeling as you're hammered through the floor of the cloud like a wooden peg. The view of the divided farmland below is a picture book and ennobling. Your fodder enriches riches further the land, which is nicely put. And you have died. But I'm like, well, why wouldn't it take the hat? And it was only later it occurred to me, oh, he wouldn't take the hat because it didn't have the louse on it. But I think, again, if not a bug, it's badly written. The giant's supposed to just be taking the hat. They talk about him being a bald giant, so I assumed he wanted the hat to keep the sun off his head or whatever, as us baldies like to do. So I would have thought that, I don't know, it bugged me that he wouldn't take the hat. So I consider that one of those Carrington bugs where the coat is fine, but the thinking is wrong.
That should be your epitaph. The code is fine, but the thinking is wrong. Here lies the Carrington Manson story.
Yes. So I've got, that's going to be my own, the Carrington law. Code is fine, but the thinking is wrong.
Now so, available there. At better bookstores everywhere.
Exactly. So I don't know what else I got here. I got That's How I Died.
Yeah, I died some other way, and it wasn't interesting, and I don't remember now. I found a couple of bugs.
Of course you did.
Yeah. The more interesting one that I found, if you're in the kitchen, you could do something, and it says, like, the waitress continues on clearing plates with her bristly hair, even though the waitress isn't in the room. So that was just a little bug that was not a big deal.
And you get into the thinking of this game, though. You say bristly hair, and I immediately go, Hisley Brer.
Yes.
Like, just constantly I do spoonerisms on everything now because of this stupid game.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. You're like, Hisley Brer, what does that mean? And it mentioned her hair, bristly hair, several times, and it had nothing to do with anything.
And you think, well, hair can be a rabbit, so is there a thing that it's put, like, yeah, ugh.
You wonder why I thought there might be something to do with a rabbit in this game, right?
There was pull a rabbit out of a hat, which is pull a habit away from a rat or whatever.
The interesting bug that I found was in Shake a Tower. There's an elf. How is it?
Yeah, a sold elf.
A sold elf. So
because he's elf
something.
In slavery, exactly. So it's a sold elf, which you can
which
turn
you can
into
change
an
into your old self.
Old self,
which could have been interesting in another game. That would have been really cool. I mean, but. Nope, not really used for that. So anyway, at one point I said, so you could change it back and forth between old self.
Yeah,
and
you have to do you have to do small talk with both of them, I think, to get all the points. Yeah.
And at one point I said I tried ask self about elf, and the elf was there, and it said self to elf, meaning that it changed into an elf, but it was already an elf, and then it gave me the other text for it was changing both ways, and then it basically tried to do the transfer, but it printed both messages, and then it didn't do the change, and it worked either way from elf to self or self to elf. Anyway, so that I thought was pretty interesting, and it wasn't in Nathan's guide, so I think that's a good one. I found a bug. You found 502 for Kevin, 0.
There's also another note I have where this was during that terrible act one where you're in the sitcom, that awful, awful sitcom. Mm-hmm. It says, you hear a man's voice from the other side of your front door. Knock, knock. So I type, who's there? Bob. Right. I type, Bob who? Bob, 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 Aran. I just wrote, that is not how knock, knock jokes work. What the heck? It's like a little kid who doesn't understand knock, knock jokes. That's terrible.
Yep.
Like, of all the knock knock jokes in the world, that's what you could come up with?
Yeah. And I couldn't say it before the spoiler friends, but the thing, I mean, I saw the thing about there's a bottle in front of you or something. And
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Right. Made me think of that thing. So, but you have a knife for some reason, and you have to type, give Bob a lobotomy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just felt that was really out of character for this game.
big time. And I saved before doing it because I'm like, okay, I have a scalpel, I have a sponge, and I have gloves. And it says, yeah, you have this bottle in front of you. I'm like, well, or it's like, you have a bottle in front of me or something. I'm like, well, okay, you clearly want frontal lobotomy. And it's either I'm doing it to Bob or I'm doing it to myself. So save, yeah, and I type give Bob frontal lobotomy. And that's literally, and it doesn't work. You just like pretend, you swipe across. So it's right, like you're doing it for the camera and everybody laughs. But I'm like, I just thought I'm literally going to be stabbing this guy.
Right.
There's one part that you have to back in again in the with the dealing with the waitress and in the restaurant, and you spent a long time in that booth doing puns where she brings you things and brings. I was like, oh my goodness, they're just coming rapid fire, but you have to turn the tables on the waitress. You get at one point you literally have to, the waitress grabs one side and you grab the other and you turn the tables around, right, which I didn't think to do until I looked in the notes because it had already said I'd done it. Again, not a bug in a Nathan way, but a bug in a Carrington way, because I typed give short shrift, because you get a short shrift. Give short shrift to waitress. That's one way to turn the tables on the waitress. She accepts the short shrift gruffly and begins polishing glasses with it. So I'm like, that means I've already turned it because it says it's one way to turn the tables. But I guess that's telling you you should, that's your hint that you should turn the tables. But I took that as I've already turned the tables on the waitress. So I didn't think that that's a
right,
a
no, cliche. Yeah, they shouldn't have used that phrase then in that way. Yeah. 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 It was nice they had the hints built in. That was cool. Which,
especially for something like this, where if you don't know, say, the idiom or the cliche or whatever, you might not, you literally couldn't guess it. So it's kind of cool they built it in. Although I think they used to sell quite a few InvisiClues books, sometimes more than copies of the actual game. Because
why would that be, Karen? Oh,
you know why. And so people would get the InvisiClues. So maybe this is something where Activision was thinking wrong. They should put out something with it. They should make up a few idioms that are Activision exclusives. Right. Want to get 12 out of 10? Buy this book. So I liked the bit in the mayor section, which I did not like the mayor section, but at the very start of the mayor section, you're trying to get like this trumpet or something, a horn, I think it is. And you try to take it, but it won't let you take it. And it's under a list of laws. And it says like there's 10 laws, but it only lists 9 of them. And I realized, oh, possession is 9/10 of the law. So I typed possess the horn and it worked. And I was like, okay, that's good. I figured that one out on my own and I liked it. Like, I was like, that is a fun one. But there were very few of those.
I didn't get that one actually. I needed help on getting the horn. But similarly in that same one, there's some beer under a sign that says pretenses, and the pretenses are not true, and it won't let you take the beer because it's not yours, but you can take beer under false pretenses.
Yep. So again, I wrote that too, and I thought both of those I thought were good. Like, if the game was all stuff like that, those were good. I mean, it's silly that it'd be, but it's like a list of pretenses, and you can kind of excuse it because it's a silly sign, which is very different than trying to bring in a lovely shepherd or whatever it was, because it's going to be a shovely leopard or something, a shoving leopard.
Right.
So it's a loving shepherd. Why is it a shoving leopard? So it has to be a leopard now that's shoving something just to force the, bug me.
Yeah, no, it's
bug
all
me,
just
bug
so
me, bug me.
Contrived.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
So in the end, did you finish all the sections with all the points?
No, I was 1 point shy on something, on Bizarre, and I didn't care, and I didn't go back, and I didn't find out what it was.
I got them all, but I did cheat in a few places, so it's kind of, it didn't, like, I got them all only because when I was stuck, I would just look up the answer, essentially, so.
Sure.
In that sense, I got them all, but I didn't really get them all.
Right, yeah, no, in a manner of speaking, I just did walk through my way through, because I just didn't care at all. I Sherlocked my way through that one because I just like my level of interest. And then that one room in Matter of Speaking, if there's one room in the Matter of Speaking, you can only type any word one time. So don't mince words in there. So if you're in there and you say, I don't know, I don't even remember what's in there. Examine table, and it tells you about the table. And then if you say get table, it says, I've heard that word before. And then you can't use talk about table ever again in that room. So it's
sure easy.
Sure
you can, because you just restart.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You just paint yourself into a corner and got to restart. And I didn't. That's just like, seemed like the worst kind of Zork loud room sort of puzzle, and I didn't like it.
I didn't like it. Mind it, because I was kind of looking for more puzzles, because there's not... the game is full of little pun things where you... It'll say muddy blurter and you have to type bloody murder or whatever.
Right.
So it's full of that, but those don't feel like puzzles. They just feel like, here's a word. Do you know what the other version of this is? Yes, I can take the two letters and scramble them. But there were so few puzzles. Like, that's why something puzzles, like take the beer under false pretenses felt good, because that's at least kind of like a puzzle. It wasn't just that you read Pulse pretenses and reversed it. You had to think, oh, it's pretenses. Wait, those aren't true. Oh, false pretenses. I can take the beer. See, then that's a puzzle you're actually solving. But there must have been like four of those in the game.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's the thing with the giant and the louse and little things like that.
Right. But knowing that the gene client is a clean giant and typing that's not a puzzle in a satisfying kind of way. But knowing that, okay, if I can get rid of the giant by making him suddenly heavy because it says his feet are kind of sticking a bit through the clouds, that's a puzzle. But there's very, very few of those. So it's unsatisfying all around.
Yep.
I say.
Agree. Agree.
Yep. Anyway, I think that's all I got. Got anything else?
Yeah. No.
That's a shame. That's two in a row that weren't awesome.
The next one's going to be great.
I think the next one is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it. I've enjoyed this series. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, the first two were great and were solid, at least. And this one, I think, is going to be solid. I hope so.
We will find out when we come next. But meantime, I will wrap things up by saying, this has been Eaten by a Grue, the Infocom podcast. If you want to send us email about how wrong we were about this game, hey, maybe, you can send us email to Grue, that's G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz, I am at Carrington, and we'd be over the moon, that's an idiom, if you'll give us a nice review on iTunes, which helps other people find the podcast, supposedly. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for, what's another idiom? He cut the mustard and he let us use his song as a theme tune. I don't know. So next up, we are going to play, what are we playing?
Sorcerer.
Spellbreaker?
Spellbreaker, sorry.
Spellbreaker. We're playing Spellbreaker next.
We're not going to do it too soon because haste makes waste.
We're wrapping up now. Good podcast with you, Kevin.
Good podcasting with you, Carrington.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Oh no! You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Grue.
Didn't love the game, but I like podcasting with you.
It'll take me a while, but time heals all wounds.
You're killing me.